Hello, beloved listeners, and welcome to another Advanced Living Radio Hour. This is Kenneth Lesser. Just, I am so thrilled and delighted to be your host again today and bringing you, oh yes, a deliciously intelligent and supportive guest. What's our commitment? Listen in to Advanced Living Radio and watch your life get better. And why does that happen? Well, part of it is because I have this intention. I pray every day, Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun inspiring the largest number of people to do what? Well, easily, naturally, joyously experience vibrantly, exquisitely, healthy, wealthy, passionate living. When? Well, in the shortest amount of time and with the least intrusion into their lives so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. Yes, there's a lot to be done, and today we have got someone who is going to help us fill one of the most important gaps that I could ever imagine. I don't know if any of you have ever longed for the communication skills and the consciousness that would help you communicate in ways consistently that you build connection and trust and community instead of some of the times where we've gotten into conversations and people have gotten defensive or they've disconnected from us. Well, our guest today, David Shindall, is an expert in an important and easy-to-learn technique, and he's going to share how to create a quality of connection, first with yourself, because what? No one can love you more than what? Than you love yourself. So he's going to help us to communicate better with ourselves and then others in ways that dissolves the barriers and supports finding solutions that work for everyone through the consciousness and the skills of what has been called nonviolent, or some people also call it compassionate communication. And David's life's work has been to help create a world in which people have power with each other instead of power over each other. And to this end, David has been studying and teaching this nonviolent communication since 1999. And he's been sharing these techniques as a teacher trainer in language for the Montessori Education Center of the Rockies, as a presenter of communication workshop for organizations, schools, churches, as well as mediation work with couples and families, where sometimes people have been stuck, and instead of going into divorce and other things, it's amazing what this kind of work can do to help people get things resolved and stay together and happily. And David has been working with children and their families for 18 years in a variety of settings, from villages for abandoned children where in Bolivia and Costa Rica, to cram schools in Taiwan, to preschools and elementary schools in Denver, where he is currently a first grade teacher in Denver, Colorado. So get ready, folks. And welcome David Shindall. Hello, hello, David.
Hi, Ken. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. What a treat this is. Now, we've got a term here that most people, I believe, have not heard of. And there's, of course, book after book out there on the market on how to communicate more effectively. Would you help us to understand what makes nonviolent communication different?
certainly. I would love to. What I find is particularly powerful about nonviolent communication is the emphasis that's placed on the consciousness necessary for us to express whatever is going on in us, whether it be joy or pain and anger, in a way that brings us closer to others instead of disconnecting us from others. So without this consciousness, any process of communication, including nonviolent communication, it runs the risk of becoming a mechanical process that will likely lead to disconnection from oneself and others. So let me give you an example of this. For example, I remember learning how to use I statements when I began to work with children, and but I found myself quickly discouraged and confused about why this idea that makes so much sense intellectually didn't really pan out for me. And I remember running myself into a brick wall with a particular five-year-old who had knocked down younger children on his way to the playground, and he wouldn't stop as these children were sitting, you know, crying on the sidewalk. And he would grab things from others in the class. He would yell at others and basically do everything that he could to make himself a pariah, you know. So what do you do with a child like this? So
And he's not alone. There's more of them out there.
Oh, yes. That's the wonderful thing that I learned as a teacher is that that child will keep coming back. So what I learned was that, you know, my I statements really fell flat with this child. And so they actually seem to have the opposite effect with them, because every day we seem to just be digging our trenches deeper. Him, with what I would call, you know, he just became more rebellious and more aggressive. And myself, with my strategies to somehow control him better. Does that sound familiar to what happens in the world with?
Oh boy! I mean, the children, you can't just let them go and run amok. You have to take charge. You have to have some discipline, some control. But you're sharing that some ways of attempting to assert leadership aren't very effective.
Exactly. And it was because I didn't really have the consciousness. So fortunately for me and this child and all the children in the class, I found myself sitting in a workshop with Marshall Rosenberg, who's the founder of the Center for Nonviolent Communication. If you want more information about that, you can go to www.cnbc.org. And I raised my hand in this workshop and told Marshall about my trials with this child, who I described as aggressive and disturbed and all the things that I had tried and failed. And this is what Marshall told me that really opened the door to this consciousness that I referred to earlier, is that what you haven't communicated to this child is that what he is doing in this moment is the most wonderful thing that he could possibly be doing. And I was quite shocked at this, of course, because I had no idea what in the world he could possibly get.
Yeah, what do you mean by that?
Yeah,
how push down some little child.
Right.
And you're going to tell him it's wonderful. Well, I got to know more. What goes on with this?
Exactly. That was my mouth was wide open as well. So I was desperately wanting to hear what he had to say about this. So what he meant by this was that it's not the action of grabbing things and knocking children down that's wonderful, but that everyone, this child and everyone on the planet, is simply doing the best that they can with what they have to meet needs that we all have in common. And when I can get to that type of connection with the child, I'll have power with the child instead of having power over the child in the way I was trying to do, which is trying to control him, maybe putting up progressively more stern consequences for his behavior.
Right. So this is a shift from dealing with behaviors to an understanding about a person in their behaviors is attempting to meet their needs.
Exactly. Yeah.
Woo!
And so that was huge for me. And I the interesting point about this was that when I got to that level of understanding, I saw our commonality. I think what changed in me was that I was no longer seeing this child as somehow different than myself and wrong for what he was doing. I saw this child as meeting needs that I myself have. And interestingly, at that time, I was going through a breakup with a girlfriend, and this child was really wanting friendship and was extremely hurt and sad about not being friends with a particular boy. And when I could see it in that way, I really felt a commonality with him about just really understanding that hurt and wanting to be included, wanting that type of friendship and that care. When I could talk to him, even using the same words that I did before, but the consciousness was different. He was seeing that I wasn't making him wrong in what he was doing. I wasn't agreeing with the strategies, but I was on his side.
Ah, and so this is basically about learning this consciousness that you're talking about.
Yes.
And, wow, so I want to know more about that. How can we learn that?
Well, let me tell you how we can learn this. So, first of all, I want to give you a quick analogy that I find really, really helps me understand the process, because I think kind of in stories it kind of helps.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
This analogy comes from Maria Montessori, and she was an Italian educator and doctor. And she, in a book called Education and Peace, she makes an analogy between violence on our planet and the plague. And what she said was that when the plague began, people had no idea about the cause. There were just people dying, and there was mayhem. And so what they did was, you know, they start looking for answers. What's causing this? And they would think about, you know, possibilities. Like, I think those people on the other side of that mountain are shooting poisonous darts at us. That was one idea. And so they would go out and they would try people and actually convict them and execute people for starting the plague.
Mm.
Because they're not aware of the causes, obviously this isn't, so she compared that to what's going on in her time as World War I, but the idea that we could go out and get somebody and that would cause, you know, that would get rid of the problem,
yeah,
is just as absurd as trying to get rid of the plague by executing a couple of people. And the other thing that this really highlights is that when we're not aware of the cause of violence, our strategies that we use often exacerbate the problem. So what the people did in the plague was to crowd in a church and try to be safe that way. But since they weren't aware of the cause, that was actually the worst thing they could do. And so I see this as just a wonderful metaphor for what the tragedy that happens in our lives when we're not aware of the cause of violence. And that's what I am getting back to the first question is, what makes this different is that NVC really gets to the root cause of violence and disconnection. And that root cause is in the way we've been taught to think and the way we've been taught to communicate and the way our means of influence, by which I mean how do we get people to do what we want? So those three things are the cause, I believe, of disconnection and violence on the planet.
Mm.
So I guess this leads into how to learn about this consciousness. And I would say the first part, as in, I think the foundation of any spiritual discipline, in my belief, is just a basic ability to be aware, to discern when I'm acting from a consciousness that enriches life and when I'm acting from a consciousness that separates me and doesn't enhance life.
Sure. And by consciousness, could we also at times talk about that consciousness as a set of attitudes?
Let me think about that. A set of attitudes. I would say, let me think. So maybe if you could clarify, what do you mean by attitudes?
Oh, well, when you were talking about that example of working with that child and realizing that their behavior was, while their behavior wasn't to be condoned, that it was an attempt at that time doing the best they could with the skills they had to meet some of their needs.
Yes.
And so...
Yeah. So, Ken, I think the way I would say that, in my understanding, would be to it's a way of focusing our attention. So,
okay.
Yeah. So I think it's just semantics, probably. I think
okay.
we probably say the same thing. But I think I choose to put my attention on something, on basically a set of principles that ground me in this consciousness. And one of those principles is we all have the same needs, every single one of us. We have universal needs for caring and contribution and honesty, authenticity, these types of common core needs. Anywhere you go in the world, we have these needs. And secondly, all our behavior, no matter what it looks like, is an attempt to meet one of those needs. And that, if you just think about it, for me, this is so liberating, what this means for us. Because if I really get that in my bones, if I focus my attention there, then I won't ever hear a criticism or a demand or any of these things that we kind of get afraid of. Because what I see is, instead of this person being aggressive and whatever other judgment I might have of them, instead of seeing that, I see that this person is a human being with the same needs, and that connects me to them. It brings out my compassion for that person.
Wow.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Continue. That's great.
The third part of this consciousness is that all attacks and violence and judgments are tragic expressions of unmet needs. And so I see that this behavior, it's a tragic expression. I say tragic for two reasons. One is that this person is very unlikely to get what they really need when they're expressing it this way. And secondly, because there's a much higher propensity for this to propagate violence on Earth. And so it's a tragic way of speaking, but we've been taught this way, and it's no accident that we've learned this communication. And this gets into learning about where this language actually supports a structure that allows some people to control other people. And so it's no accident that we have words like have to and should and who's good and bad. All of these words kind of get us to a basic thing that they have in common is that they get us to focus our attention outside of ourselves to what somebody else thinks of me instead of going inside myself to what I'm really needing. And so there's just this fundamental disconnection that we get taught in our culture that makes it very difficult to get our needs met.
Okay. So, I guess so many teachers or we're raised by parents that frequently may be evaluating us. At least I'll speak, that was my upbringing of good, bad, right, wrong, yes,
yeah.
No. And then that was continued in school, and that may be standard for many of us. And you're opening a doorway here saying, well, while that's gone on for quite some time, there's consequences to that, and you have another way of expressing things that actually can make our lives better.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow. And I'm just wondering because there's this idea of people take all kinds of assertiveness trainings so that they can speak up and let people know, how they're what's going on, how they're feeling. But yet. I don't know. I've had times where I haven't spoken up. There's sometimes fear of what happens if we're honest or speak our truth. And can you help work with this fear? How others will react?
Yeah.
Or honesty?
Yeah. And this is something I hear quite often, actually. Because the way we've been taught to be honest is, frankly, quite frightening. People have not had good results when they have been honest in the way our culture teaches us to be honest. So I'd like to make a differentiation once again about something I would call an honesty that leads to connection and an honesty that leads to disconnection. And I think this is a wonderful way to highlight the two different types of consciousness that I'm talking about here. One is power with people, and the other one is power over people.
Okay.
So the type of honesty that disconnects us is an honesty about my judgments. And so what that looks like is, you know, Ken, I've got to be honest with you. You know, you're really ruining our family. Or, Ken, I have to be honest with you, you're really selfish. I'm being honest.
Yes.
But I'm
you
being
said
honest.
You are.
I'm being honest about my judgments, about what's good and bad, right and wrong, inappropriate, appropriate. And so this is the type of honesty that leads to disconnection and pain. And so what I'm really excited about in nonviolent communication is it gives us a different type of honesty. This is so powerful that we can talk and express our pain in a way that brings connection and express that we don't want to be with somebody in a way that brings connection. It's very powerful. So this, in the nonviolent communication, I express honesty about what's inside of me. So that
okay.
might be in that terms, instead of saying, I think you're selfish, is, you know, gosh, I need to be honest with you. I'm just feeling really uneasy, first of all, even talking with you about this, because I don't want you to take it in a way that there's something wrong that you're doing. I just really want to, you know, connect with what's, you know, going on inside of me, because I really value our relationship and I want it to be better. So I'm just feeling sad when I see that, you know, the dishes are in the sink for the third time this week, and I've done them every day so far. I'm just really wanting some support and would really like that to be done joyfully, just so we could have more harmony in our house. How does that sound to you when I say this? You know, so there's an honesty, but I'm not having to make you wrong or blame you about anything. And so, you know, what I just love this word tragedy, because it really is tragic the way we've been taught to speak, is that if I feel pain or if I feel hurt or something in myself, instead of going there and staying with what's inside myself, my finger goes out. And who's to blame for this, for my anger? Who's to blame for my hurt? And that is the tragic thing that we've been taught in our culture, and what really keeps us from connecting with people.
The victim blame game.
Yes, the victim blame game, yes, exactly.
So rather than saying, okay, well, here's this person, they're hurt in some way, so we could definitely say they're not getting their needs met. What hasn't been spoken, if I'm hearing you correctly, is that the individual that may have caused harm to a person that's called the victim, that person who caused them harm, chances are pretty good they're not getting their needs met either.
And one little just semantic thing that I'd like to bring up is the whole cause thing, because I think this is a big point. This is something, one of the first things I teach in my nonviolent communication workshops is the difference between stimulus and cause. Because if I have it in my mind that somebody can cause me to feel a certain way, I give up all my power. Likewise, if I believe that I can cause somebody else's feelings, I can't really be with them just where they are, because I go into my head and start to feel guilty that I caused them to feel a certain way, or I start to feel defensive or something like that. So this is a really key differentiation between stimulus and cause. And I'll just give you a quick example to show this differentiation. So let's just take being ignored, let's say, that somebody isn't paying attention to you as you would like. And let's
okay.
say this person is very important in your life, and they haven't called you back, and when you speak to them, they're not really giving you the attention you would like. And boy, when you're really needing that connection and with this person, and you're really wanting some intimacy with this person, or whatever it is, you could feel, you know, very discouraged and sad. And we would think that person is causing me to feel this way by their actions. But on another day, another week, if I'm feeling overwhelmed, I've got so much stuff to do, I have so many projects, and the last thing I need to do is for this person to call me, and, you know, to call me back, let's say. And I might be relieved. It's the same action. This person isn't calling me back. I'm relieved in one situation, and the other one I'm feeling sadness and despair. And so it's not the action. There's nothing inherent in anybody's action that can make us feel a certain way. It is always a function of our needs. And so in nonviolent communication, we connect feelings and needs. I feel because I need. And our culture teaches us that our observations make us feel something. You did this, so I feel. And so that's, is that distinction?
Oh, boy, that's so important. I've heard things on both sides of the emotional range. Someone might say, oh, you make me so angry when you do that. Or someone, they can do something that we enjoy, and they say, oh, you make me happy when you do that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Either one of those, it's like is giving away the power that they're the ones that are creating our feeling.
Yeah, yeah. And so in that case, I'm glad that you brought that up, you know, about somebody does something that you really enjoy, and it's more of, I would express it as a celebration. Boy, when you do that, I just feel so... Just so joyful because I really love knowing that I'm cared about, or it just really meets my need for care in the world, or something like that. And so, it's all about me. The celebration is about my needs getting met, not necessarily what another person does.
Yeah.
but it gives the other person information that they've enriched our lives.
Yeah, and I was just imagining how startling it could be to someone if they did something wonderful that we liked, and whatever, they gave us flowers or prepared a wonderful meal or a back rub or one of my favorites, a foot rub,
mm-hmm.
and then to be able to say, oh, that action, is so pleasing. And the way I interpret what you're doing, that interpretation makes me so happy.
Mm.
Because you were pointing out that I could get an offer for a foot rub, for instance, or someone could start a foot rub, and if the timing might be off, and instead of being able to receive it as a wonderful thing that I normally would enjoy, at that point, I might interpret that same touch on my feet, wait, this is inconvenient.
Mm-hmm.
The timing's not good. I normally love foot rubs, but not now.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So it's like we actually connecting to it's us and our interpretation of things that is where we get... create the evaluation.
Yes. And I'm not against evaluating. I would just evaluate in terms of needs that are getting met instead of you're a good person. That's a moralistic judgment versus a value judgment. And
mm-hmm.
So I do make judgments, but my judgments are my needs getting met or are they not? Are your needs getting met or are they not? So it's that type of evaluation.
Yeah. Wow, okay. Huh, so that's kind of how to express authentically our judgments.
Yeah, and I guess for me, I'm the poster child of having received the other in my life, because I grew up in this culture, of what it's like when I receive messages such as, let me put it this way, I said earlier that... all attacks of violence and judgments are tragic expressions of unmet needs. And I would say all praise and compliments and approval are tragic expressions of met needs.
Mm.
So praise and compliments are tragic expressions of met needs, I would say. And I will tell you why that's tragic. I'm guessing that this may resonate with some of your listeners, because this is a very common way to treat people, because this is what we've learned in terms of good and bad. So I do something in my family or at school, and I'm labeled, oh, that is so great. You're such a good boy for doing that. Boy, you're so nice. You know, things like this. And then what does a child learn from this? I learned to look outside myself. And so what happens if I don't do that thing? Well, I did it and I was good, and if I don't feel like doing it, then
yeah.
I'm bad.
Are you still good?
Exactly. And so there's a fundamental disconnection there from myself about, you know, if I don't want to do something, I feel bad about myself. I start feeling guilty. And what I love about nonviolent communication, this is really liberating for me, is that when I don't want to do something that would be, you know, seen as nice or good, if I don't want to listen to somebody, if I don't want to respond to an email, I have the tools that I can be authentic and not be acting out of this fear of, oh, they're going to say that I'm a selfish person or whatever. And so it just really has led me to a different relationship with myself as well.
If they did respond in an email or in a conversation, wow, you're selfish, you're this, you're that, they could be making all kinds of judgments. And yet, with these skills, if I'm understanding, you can stay strong in an actual good opinion of yourself that's separate from your behaviors.
Exactly, yeah. And that's very liberating. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. And I'm just wondering, sometimes we want to talk to someone, a situation has arisen, and they're not willing to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering about that. Can you address that a little bit?
Oh, sure. And so in this process, there really only one person needs to be in the consciousness. So as long as I'm in the consciousness, I'm confident that things will work out okay. So one of the big things I learned with nonviolent communication is how to hear a no, which is basically, I don't want to talk to you or whatever. And for example, I'll give you an example of my lovely daughter. She's my guru. She's my nonviolent communication guru. She's 12 years old, and she's just taught me so much about this, about when I'm really in the consciousness or when I'm just using the words. So, for example, sometimes she'll give me the hand, and the hand means, you know, the hand that means, you know, talk to the hand, Dad, right? So that's basically saying, I don't want to talk to you, right?
Okay.
Now, before I started learning NBC, I would take that as a rejection. I would take it as she doesn't care about me, or, you know, she's rude, or she doesn't care about me. It's something like that, right?
Yes.
And what I see is that it's impossible to say no. It's impossible to not, you can't not communicate. Everything is a communication. So she's giving me wonderful information with her hand when she's holding it up. I used to see the hand as a wall, and now I see it as a window. And so with NBC, I see that no is just a poor expression of a yes. And so what is she saying yes to? What are the needs underneath that hand being outstretched? And so I look to see that, you know, I see the humanity in that. It's not rude. It's not that she doesn't care about me. It's just that what she's really saying to me is, Dad, this isn't the way to talk to me. It's not that I don't want to talk to you or communicate or connect with you. It's just that this way or at this time, it's not working for me.
Yeah.
So that's a very different place than the place that I learned from my culture. So with that, I hear the no and I try to search for the yes. So I'm guessing that this is kind of a drag for you the way this conversation is. Yeah, Dad, I'd much rather, you know, be doing anything than this, you know. Okay, I get that. So this just really isn't a good time for you to talk. And I don't give up my own need. That's something that Marshall Rosenberg taught me. Is that I don't give up my need. That would be something called selfless. and I'm not going to give up my precious need for wanting to be heard about something. And so I would say, well, okay, that's fine. Would you be willing to talk to me for about 3 minutes after you eat or after you, you know, do whatever? And so I'm making a request for you know, something that would help hopefully get my need met. And I found also, just as a little tip, that the saying a time also is really helpful when you make a request with people, because often people might respond like, oh, I don't know what I'm getting into. You know, when you say, do you want to talk? I want to talk with you. Is this going to be like an hour thing or what? So if I say, you know, a short time frame, that usually helps. And she's happy to, you know, to talk or to listen to me for that amount of time, at least.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so that's the importance of being specific.
Yeah.
And helps allay someone's potential fears of getting into some marathon conversation.
Yeah, the specificity and the clarity. This just brings up for me as well, just another thing that I love about nonviolent communication is just the sense of the power and the responsibility, because it really puts it all back on me, that there's nothing wrong that the other person is doing. I want to come from a place where I'm taking full responsibility, that I want to express myself so clearly about what's going on for myself in a way that assures the person that I'm not trying to blame them about anything, that I will get my needs for understanding met. And so if I try something and it doesn't work, I go back to myself, or I try to empathize with the other person of what's going on for them. But it's that trust in the process of connection. And that is the objective of nonviolent communication, is to create a quality of connection in which everyone's needs matter and can be met. That's the objective. So it's a radical paradigm shift from what we've been taught, which is winning is getting what you want. And this is saying the relationship is first over what you want, over the strategy you want.
Wow. Okay. And then when there's the relationship in place, a willingness to help each other meet our needs it flows much more easily, if I'm understanding correctly.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, I'm just kind of thinking some of our remaining time. So much is going on with relationships these days. I mean, the divorce rate, you know, I mean, people go into a marriage not thinking, well, geez, we're going to get married so we can get divorced or have a terrible time. They have high expectations, and yet 50% or more aren't remaining in that marital place. And I know you'd mentioned doing some mediation. I don't know if you could make some comments, and perhaps we could even have the phone lines open, because relationships, men and women, or couples, whatever coupling has taken place, it could be straight, could be gay, whatever, just a couple involved in some loving interaction where there's no longer loving and they're, you know, upset. Can you help and address this? And let me also give these lines here. We've got a toll-free number, 877-876-5227 in the U.S. For Canada and the U.S., 888-815-9756. And a local number, the 530-876-3222. Okay.
So one of the things that I've noticed in my mediation with people is that usually people stay on, like, they have intense disagreements about something, let's say money, and so they talk about that thing, and they put a lot of energy into that kind of strategy that is upsetting them. And as I said before, it's where the real power is getting to the relationship, getting to the connection between the two people. So money is just a manifestation of, I would say, communication problems, you know, difficulty in connection between the couple. And that's just one way that it gets manifested. So where I, what I try to do with couples is to get them to see those needs that they can connect to beneath the strategies. What does this all say about their connection with each other? And so this is very different than what we've been brought up with. You know, I think a lot of people probably have people that they know that tell the same story over and over and over and over and over again about some pain that they have experienced in the past. And this is the same thing that happens in couples, is that they wallow. And because the reasons why they're wallowing and they're not getting anywhere is because they're stuck in the story, stuck in the thoughts about what's been happening. And they're not going to this deeper level that nonviolent communication gets us to, which is what are you valuing here that's not, you know, getting met? What are your values? And when couples can talk in that way, and we slow this down to about 10 times slower than we actually ever communicate.
Oh.
So I really want to get that connection that the other person is really hearing about that, what the other person values. It's very difficult not to want to give that, because, oh, I have that need too, so much for wanting to be cared for and so much for wanting trust. And they can see that. It's almost impossible not to, because it's so human. Whereas talking about money, we could disagree till the rest of our lives, you know, about strategies about how to spend money or strategies of how to raise our kids. But the needs, we can find some commonality there. There's a big power in that.
Wow. Wow. And you mentioned you'd done mediation. I don't know if you could share possibly an example of, you know, keeping names anonymous, of course. But
sure, sure. Well, let's see. Now, what kind of example would you like? An example of what?
I guess a couple that was having some trouble communicating I guess things may have gotten to some level of hostility.
Sure,
they may have been separated or contemplating divorce. Or
I think I'll give you an example of, you know, some people who, you know, they're yelling at each other at house over, let's say, finances. And
Can you hold that thought for just a second?
Sure.
We may have a caller on the line.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, welcome.
Thank you.
Do you have a question or comments for David?
I'd like to make a comment. This is Wendy from Colorado, and I've been studying nonviolent communication, practicing on and off for about 5 years, and finally had a real opportunity to understand it when my marriage ran aground. And was very fortunate to work with David in the process of exactly what he's been saying throughout this program, getting clarity, getting past the well-worn path of continuing to just talk at each other and getting nowhere, and recognizing that you married this person for a real reason, and the whole relationship can open up when you find that safety to be honest and really start to hear them. And I just have to say that David himself has a real special facility for connecting people in this way.
Oh, wow. So he helped you through a difficult time in your marriage.
We had known David before, you know, we just recognized, wow, we are just at a standstill. And I personally was unwilling to continue in a status quo. And we have very different communication styles, my husband and I. And through David's extremely gentle, he just mentioned slowing everything down, you really start to see this other person in a brand new way. You probably didn't even know them that way when you first got together. It's not even that it was lost. It just hadn't been uncovered yet. And it was just amazing to think you're on a path to divorce and find out you're nowhere near getting divorced. If
wow.
you start to open up to each other in this way, a whole new, the relationship almost starts at that point, even though you've been together 10 years.
Huh.
It's so profound, and Ken, you had mentioned it's an easy process to learn, and it is. It's very easy to initially grasp, but over time, as you work with it and you struggle with it, and recognize, oh, I get it intellectually, but then there's something special about working with someone like David who is very skillful. They coach you to walk through it, and you get to see these profound results from very simple steps. So anyone listening out there who's struggling with a particular person, David's really great with the stories about kids. Very, very quickly, with a little bit of coaching, can just transform how you see this person in front of you. Transform how you see yourself.
And you found that, because I know there's some kind of therapeutic or counseling techniques where people are yelling and screaming at empty chairs or beating on pillows or or all kinds of different, quote, therapeutic processes. But I'm hearing from you that this is very gentle and supportive.
Anyone who, as David says, has the true intention with the consciousness around NVC will really help everybody. David had mentioned you start to look outside yourself for validation. Whatever he does, and I haven't quite figured out why it might have been special to David or just NVC, helps you stay very close to yourself. For some people, like me, start to know what you need. You might not have even thought of your needs, but you're acting out, trying to get them met. And this process, especially with somebody just staying with you and coaching you to understand it, there's such safety. A lot of people out there have not had safe childhoods. And then you come into this extremely safe place. We actually were laughing more than... We had a few tense moments, David, you might corroborate this, but we laughed a lot when most people are saying, how could you be thinking about divorce and you're laughing while you're going through this?
Yeah.
So there's something that seems so honest, and even if you're struggling and feeling kind of dumb, the process really gives you a lot of space to start to come out, be honest, really recognize what integrity means. And you walk away saying, oh, there's a whole other world out here we haven't even explored. So it just opens up opportunity if you keep the consciousness that you're looking to create a relationship, not win. That was a big thing that I just heard. Don't try to win. Try to, and at the same time, not give yourself up and give over to another person. All those things subtly start to emerge when you're working with this process.
Would you say for both you and your husband that through this coaching of a communication style, both getting your needs met even more than before, is your love deeper than it was?
Absolutely. We at the moment we looked at each other and said, we're not getting divorced. We just changed the date of when our anniversary is. It started after this process. I consider this more meaningful than the first time we got together. And he's completely understanding of this process. Both of us came to this work with David already aware that we could get so much more out of it. And it was, my rule was, I will only talk to David if we get back into speaking. And it was a good call. And quite frankly, I don't want to make this about me, but when we really dug into one of the things that was causing me the biggest difficulty, it had nothing to do with my husband. It came out of my childhood, and I was bringing this forward in this sort of, what David would say, tragic expression of an unmet need. And once I realized that, it really let me back off him, as I didn't even realize I was thinking he was the cause of it. And he was simply triggering this in me, and I was acting out a process. I couldn't even get near it. And we all just stared at each other and went, oh, my God.
Wow.
You know, and that was, this was months ago. We hadn't even really fully processed that, to get back in and get more time with David to just...
Oh, absolutely. Well, one of the key things, if I'm understanding, there's many different therapeutic processes, if I'm hearing correctly... there's some processes where past life regressions or you have to go back and recall everything in your childhood, on and on and on. I mean, it can be extensive. And yet, if I'm understanding correctly, through this nonviolent communication and connecting to needs, that you were able, in a very gentle way, to process through some childhood stuff that was in some way traumatic to you, and yet it wasn't. It was easy to move through this stuff.
It was, I think you're right on. There's nothing. Certainly there's nothing violent about the process. It's just extremely supportive and very gentle, and really brings. I would think David would say, well, you know, yes, he's skillful, but he really brings you to your own connection to yourself.
Ah.
The answers are already inside. How can you bring that out in a pretty tense situation? I was kind of shocked it worked. I was shocked where we went with it. I didn't expect much. I could be cranky, and David just holds the energy straight on as the guide. This is what this consciousness looks like. This is what we're working toward, and no judgment, no judgment. And, you know, I could have them. He would work with me to find out what's under it. Never any judgment at me that I'm being too aggressive or too this or too that.
It kept coming back to needs.
To just, and so he just models the process until while you, and especially if you get to work with it as opposed to intellectually, you're really in it working with it.
Wow.
You truly get to feel the profundity. It's so amazing that I can't even really convey. I'm so glad to listen to your show, because now we're going to go do all kinds of exercises.
Oh.
Because it's fun also to take some further steps without having to lean on David.
Okay. So you can learn some skills, and you can testify from your own experience as a couple that as you continue to use these processes, that it's a joyous thing to learn.
Oh, it is, and so much more humor. When we run into a sticky wicket, you almost have that memory to draw on of the feeling. It's a felt sense. And we look at each other like, well, we could go down that old path, or we can keep moving in the direction where we've sort of renewed our relationship to go. And you don't forget it once you have that experience. And just specifically, I think I've had the most experience working with David as a trainer. And he personally is phenomenal, but as I said, with anyone who's really interested in understanding and working with people with NVC, they're all going to be very, very supportive of helping you grow in this direction. It's phenomenal.
Oh, this is wonderful. Well, Wendy, I want to thank you. We've got to wrap things up, but I just really appreciate you being on with David and I today.
Oh, I appreciate it, too.
You have a great day, Wendy.
Thank you.
Thank you,
too.
Bye-bye. And now, David, what I'm realizing, there's a depth to this that is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
No wonder you like this stuff.
Exactly.
And here we are. We're just getting started in this. I am just wondering if you would consider actually coming back and being a guest another day on the program.
I would love to. Yeah, that would
be great. I feel like there's so much more to share and more examples, you know, of different types of stuff you've worked with, where people, you know, whatever, over money, over this, over that, over you name it, and to actually hear some examples of you helping people.
I would love to. You know, this is my passion, and I.
Now, how can people connect with you? I know on the BBS radio, it's the www.compassionate-living.com. And is there an email or a phone number that people...
Certainly, yeah. So you could go to that website that I just put up. And also, my phone number is 303-399-5170 if anybody's interested in the services I offer, which is... Basically, communication coaching. I do trainings from anywhere from 1 hour to 13-week trainings as well. And, of course, the couples and family mediation, you can give me a call. You can also email me at D, as in David, Shindoll, S-H-I-N-D-O-L-L, at hotmail.com, if you're interested in contacting me.
Great. And then we'll have posted on the website the return, which I believe will be one of the Saturdays in August.
Oh, wonderful.
So, David, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. It was my pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity to share what I'm passionate about.
Oh, you're welcome. And to my beloved listeners, tune in next week. We're going to have something that's about ageless secret, an amazing way to just spray the years away. You're going to love this. Spray the years away. And in the meantime, just thank you, David. Thank you, beloved listeners. And thank you, Creative Source, our beloved God, for giving us this time together. Until we meet again, God bless you, and goodbye for now. Let's go out.